This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the evening edition. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. Leslie Chilcott is the Academy Award-winning producer of An Inconvenient Truth and Waiting for Superman. Her latest documentary, A Small Section of the World, is an inspirational story about a small group of women from a remote farming village in Costa Rica and how they sparked a revolution in the coffee-growing world. Leslie was in Kuala Lumpur last year, courtesy of Astro and the Sundance Channel, and I managed to catch up with her for a little while at her hotel to talk about the art of documentary filmmaking. We began by speaking about one of my favorites of hers, the movie It Might Get Loud, a documentary about guitar icons Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White. Can I just start off by saying you've made three of my most favorite documentaries?
No.
Yes.
Really?
I can't tell you how many times I've seen It Might Get Loud. That opening sequence...
That's a secret love of mine and some others, I think.
It's, you know, we all have this begrudging love of The Edge anyway, so it's nice to see him do his thing. But that opening scene...
Yeah.
When Jack White's building that guitar...
Yeah.
Brilliant. It just... Yeah. For me, that just sets the mood for the whole thing.
I'm so happy to hear you say that, because we had big discussions about that, and our editor... Greg Fenton, who's super talented, really wanted to open the movie that way. And the director had reservations because it was so, you know, interesting
random.
And strange.
Yeah.
But it's a bit random, exactly. But then we realized that it immediately is letting everybody know this is not going to be an educational, you're going to have to learn a lot documentary. The things you're going to learn are going to be interesting. And
right.
Later we realized it's the best possible opening.
And it's the kind of documentary that makes you feel that... And I love these kind of documentaries best, that you're kind of eavesdropping on someone else's conversations.
Yeah.
And that must be incredibly difficult to pull off.
It is, especially when, you know, when we had the idea for the documentary, we were going to get four guitarists. So we thought, well, let's ask Jimmy Page, because he's going to say no, but we're always going to wonder, so let's just ask him first. And we asked him, and he said yes. And this was highly unusual because he doesn't do a lot of film and interviews and all of these things. And we thought, oh, my God, now what are we going to do? And we had approached Edge earlier, and he had a scheduling conflict. So we went back to the Edge, and we said, hey, it's 2 months later. You know, are you interested? And he's like, yes. And so then I actually had the idea to call Jack White, because, first of all, music is oozing out of him. He has a million bands. He's so talented. And in many ways, he kind of reminded me of a younger Jimmy Page.
Right.
And I knew that they had met. And, you know, we knew that. And Jack White, of course, said yes. And then we said, you know what? You're never going to want to go to a fourth person, because when you're with Jimmy Page, you're going to want to spend more time with him. When you're with The Edge, you're going to want to spend more time with him. When you're Jack White, you know.
And getting those three people in a room.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
That's worth the price of admission alone.
Well, and it's not really about guitarists. It's about artists that are driven to do no matter what and make no matter what kind of sacrifice to get to do what they want to love.
So An Inconvenient Truth is about almost a decade old now. It's coming on,
gosh.
Right? Yeah.
Two more years.
And
yeah.
I remember when it first came out, and I found it remarkable on two accounts. The first, that it made this kind of environmental cause accessible to a whole new
mm-hmm.
audience, but also because it kind of gave Al Gore a new lease on life.
So that's the reason I think it was so appealing to people. Granted, you know, for 30 years he'd been using originally a paper and analog slideshow, then he put in his computer, and that made complete sense. And it was the first time people sort of said, oh, I understand why it's so complicated now, or why there's confusion, you know, or why there are naysayers, or why, you know, people are saying that it doesn't exist, even though virtually all scientists that don't work for special interest groups, you know,
yeah.
agree. So, but the real reason it was watchable, because honestly, who would have gone to a movie theater to watch a slideshow, was because we got to show the real Al Gore.
Yeah.
And people hadn't seen a lot of that in the media. He'd been edited in such a way, or he was on such a mission, that he wasn't really being himself.
And no, of course, we're coming off the 2000 campaign as well.
Yes.
He was, you know, rightly or wrongly portrayed as this kind of stiff, robotic
yes.
human being,
yeah.
right? And this kind of showed this real human side to him.
And in real life, he's charismatic, he's hilarious, he's very affable.
He's passionate.
And he's passionate.
That was Leslie Chilcott. She's produced some absolutely fantastic documentaries, including It Might Get Loud and Waiting for Superman. After this, I ask Leslie about what she hopes to achieve each and every time she sets out to make a movie. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this is The Evening Edition, and I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. Late last year, I had the privilege of speaking to the award-winning producer of such films as An Inconvenient Truth and Waiting for Superman. Leslie Chilcott was in Malaysia to promote her latest film, A Small Section of the World, which is about coffee growers in Costa Rica, when I caught up with her at her hotel. It's not often that documentaries have these life-changing, world-changing moments, so I'm wondering why you do documentaries, and is it always in the back of your mind that you want to achieve that?
It's always in the back of my mind that while I'm spending 3 years of my life or however long making something, wouldn't it be nice if some other people could benefit from learning about this story or this particular truth, right? So you have a subject and they trust you to tell their story or their truth. And there's a certain responsibility that comes with that. And I also think unique to documentaries, more and more people and all different kinds of people are going to see documentaries. But people that also like to get involved and learn about issues. So I think you have, the first time we went to Sundance with An Inconvenient Truth, we didn't have those tips at the end of the film.
Right.
So, because the film wasn't done. So we showed it at Sundance, and people are like, I'm all fired up. I want to do something.
Save the world.
And there's nothing. You put a URL up there. We were the first film to put a URL. You know, now it's common, but at the end, you know, to get more information, go here. But it was after that, because people were like, I need to do something, you know? And so I think, yes, it's always in the back of my mind that there should be a movie and a story, and it would be really nice if there was a social action or social outreach. But you mentioned It Might Get Loud.
Yeah.
There was no social outreach. However, it inspired a lot of people to pick up a new instrument or to go back to music.
Yeah. And also, I guess it brought about a newfound respect. If you knew nothing about Jack White, for example.
Yes.
And you didn't know just what an extraordinary musician he was with anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think that educated people on how good these three individuals really are.
Well, yeah, and you had mentioned Edge before. He is such a technician. And he's also a good guitar player, but you don't think of him when you think of great shredders and, like, you know.
Exactly.
But he does something else equally well. And, you know, we filmed with him when he was working on the melody for a new song. And we shot with him for so long, it got dark outside. He tried every effect, and finally he found this sound, you know, and he forgot we were there. And that was such a privilege to see that process.
And it's quite interesting as well, because I think when you say Edge is such a remarkable technician, he is on the forefront of that kind of, you know, it's him and Trent Reznor, right, who keep abusing technology to find new sounds. And you know, that seems to be the forefront of music.
Yeah.
A key thing about all your documentaries, I mentioned the opening to It Might Get Loud. Same with Waiting for Superman, right? That moment, and I can't remember the individual who says it about how old they were when they stopped believing in Superman.
Yes,
I think that
Jeffrey Canada.
That single line just is this, I stopped believing in Santa Claus. It's that same, I stopped believing in magic and mystery, right?
Right.
And that kind of sets the tone for the entire film.
Yeah, and it wasn't just that he stopped believing in the Santa Claus way. Is that where he lived, he thought that Superman could come and rescue him.
That's
and
right.
He realized nobody was coming to rescue him. So what was he going to do? He had to do something, right?
Yeah.
So when he told us that story, we didn't immediately think of that as a title, but we couldn't come up with a title that we really liked. And I remember one night not being able to go to sleep. And Davis directed the movie, and he did an amazing job. But late one night, I'm like, Superman can't, Waiting for Superman. And then the producer in me, because I wasn't directing at that time, said, we will never get clearance.
I was just about to say, DC.
And then I was like, forget it. It's the best idea. It's his story. Let's at least, you know, explore this.
And how difficult was that? Because I remember speaking to, I think I was speaking to Tracy Hickman, the fantasy fiction author.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had written a Batman story.
Yeah.
And he was talking about, you know, the hell that is getting clearance from DC and Warner Brothers and all these people who own the rights.
So, yes, and there are issues between DC and Warner Brothers and that go back years and years and years,
right.
And other people as well. So we went to Warner Brothers directly and said, what do you think? And if you notice, when you see Waiting for Superman, it's waiting for in regular text. Superman is italics and has the quotes. That was in the negotiation. And we did pay for the title.
Fantastic. Now, when you go into a project, I mean, this idea of picking up these key moments, because I'm always interested in the way narrative nonfiction works and the process, because you're shooting off sequence in so many different ways for so many years,
right?
And how does that work? Do you ever go into a process thinking, I know a story, this is a story I want. Have you ever come out of it going, yeah, that's pretty much how it went? Or does it always do a 180 on you?
No, it always changes. It always changes. You have to come up with a treatment or a proposal, you know, and a budget and those things, because you need to get financing, you need to get going. And you do have a plan. But when you meet an interesting character or something happens unexpected, then what you want to do is be prepared so that you can make a left turn and follow that story instead. And it's happened on every single documentary. My current documentary, A Small Section of the World, which I'm sure we'll talk about, is about these female coffee producers in the mountains of Costa Rica,
right?
And they managed to, in less than one generation, they were able to send their kids to college, and they never went to college. So I thought, you know, this is going to be about leaving something for the next generation. And then I'm going to show the coffee process, because we're so separated from our food. You know, we don't know where it comes from. People don't know that coffee comes from a red cherry, and you pick the cherry when it's bright red and it's ripe, and you squeeze it, and there are two beans inside. And there's this whole process that I show in the film, and I thought, it's going to be about connecting us to our food and what hard work it is. So I go there, I'm doing my research, I'm getting up with the pickers at 5 a.m, picking and doing all these wonderful things, and then I meet Samantha, who is the daughter of one of the original founders,
right.
And she was studying at the Technological University of Costa Rica. She's studying agriculture, and she happened to be home just for that day when I was there. And I said, what are you doing? You know, she was running around with her computer, taking measures, doing all this stuff. She goes, well, I'm writing my thesis on the coffee mill. And I said, why? And she said, ever since I was a little girl, this is all I've wanted to do with my life. And then all of a sudden, I noticed that there was another daughter of one of the founders there. And then it took this whole women's economic empowerment direction that I hadn't really anticipated. So it always happens.
Wow.
She wasn't even in the story originally. I didn't even know about her.
I'm speaking today to the documentary filmmaker Leslie Chilcott. After the news, we speak about passion in documentary filmmaking, the secrets behind her process, as well as a brand new movie, A Small Section of the World. Don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9. Good evening. I'm Uma Paganampakepagan, and today on the Evening Edition, we're talking documentary filmmaking. Leslie Chilcott is a documentary filmmaker. She is responsible for some truly amazing movies, An Inconvenient Truth, Waiting for Superman, just a few of what she's done. She's also recently made the transition from being a producer to directing her own movies. Her latest film, A Small Section of the World, is the story of a group of women in Costa Rica who came together to imagine a different future for themselves, their families, and their community by building their own coffee mill. They became the first women's-run micro mill in their country. I caught up with Leslie when she was in KL last year, and we spoke about her passion for documentaries. Are you able to do documentaries or films that you don't feel this passionately about? Because I guess, or does the passion come with time? So you learn about something, you're like, that sounds interesting, I don't know much about it, I'm going to delve into it, spend some time with these people picking coffee beans.
Yeah.
And then suddenly there's this newfound love, and you're like, I must make this movie.
That can certainly happen, but documentaries are so hard. I mean, I've worked in other mediums, you know, in film and television, and it's the hardest of all of them. And really, for me, I have to have a really strong interest, because otherwise, all the sacrifices have to be worth it and all the things. Like, for instance, for this film, I think we had budgeted, 10 shooting days. But my DP and I were constantly going off, and I was using and I was doing sound because we couldn't afford to have sound. And we were adding days right and left. And I think I need to be passionate about it. Now, I can grow more passionate and learn more and say, oh, my God, we're going to do this instead, and we're going to go here, and we're going to do this. But I have to have a really strong interest in it.
Have you ever lost interest halfway? Have you ever abandoned the project? No. Okay,
no,
good.
Not yet. I hope it doesn't happen. But you know what? If that happened, I think you would, I mean, you'd be stuck with a tough decision, but I think you'd probably find another story that was better than your original idea that kept you interested. But I don't know.
And how important is it to be that flexible with regards to documentary filmmaking? Because I guess when it comes to a motion picture or a television show, I've met a couple of directors who are so stringent, and, you know, because of the budget constraints and everything, you know, they have everything planned and storyboarded, and, you know, you can't break away. You're not allowed to be flexible in many ways. But with a documentary, you must have that. There has to be a certain amount of agility, I'm assuming.
It's super important to be flexible and to be able to, you know, turn on a dime and go in a different direction. However, it's also important that if you had this initial thing that attracted you to that idea, to keep asking yourself, is that still important, and should I be finding that? Does it, you know, if it doesn't exist, then change courses. But for this film, A Small Section of the World, I would say, you know, quite cynically, can a cup of coffee really transform a life? You know? And every day in the morning, I would ask myself that question. So I would go hunting for those answers.
Right.
And later, I think it's helpful to do something like that, because even if you take a left turn, there's a cohesiveness because you've been searching for an answer to that question.
Yeah. I'd like to think the documentaries have found this new life on Netflix and iTunes, because now, especially over here in Malaysia, we don't have to rely on cinema chains to bring these movies to us, because they don't.
Right.
Because they don't make any money. So it's, you know, one in a million chance that you get to see An Inconvenient Truth on the big screen, right?
Yeah.
But has this new distribution made things easier for you guys in the sense that now you've got more numbers? You're like, hey, Netflix, iTunes, when looking for funding, when looking for people to back you,
Amazon,
is this new world making it better?
Yeah. Amazon Prime, Vudu, VHX.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, companies that I wouldn't have known about 10 years ago. But, I mean, this is a perfect example. I made a documentary that is half in Spanish, half in English, was shot in Costa Rica and Italy, a little bit in Los Angeles. It's 61 minutes long, so it's not short, but it's not long, right? So it's an interesting length. And here I am with you in Malaysia because of Sundance Channel and Astro. And my documentary that I shot on the Alexa with mostly prime lenses, which is really unusual in a documentary, is going to be running in Malaysia in HD.
Yeah.
And 29 other countries.
Yeah.
And that I couldn't have conceived of unless you were a worldwide theatrical hit, you know? And those for documentaries are very few and far between.
No, it's the five that get nominated for Oscars.
Yeah. Well, and sadly, some of those earn less than $1 million in the theater.
Yes, they do. So talk about narrative nonfiction. I'm kind of steeped in the whole world of narrative nonfiction at the moment. And I want to know where you think it's going, and not just on film, but also with podcasts like Serial, and all this audio stuff that's happening in the podcast world as well. Do you think we're kind of enjoying this real world stories a little more? Because for the longest time, you could not sell nonfiction in an Asian market.
Right.
Everybody wanted their Transformers and their big blockbuster hits, and that's the only thing they'd pay money to see on cinema, on television. But things are beginning to change.
I think things are beginning to change. I mean, the blockbusters absolutely have their places. I mean, I have, you know, do you have the phrase here, guilty pleasure?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like you love some pop song, you don't want to admit it, but, you know, you can't help it, you listen to
it. I live in a world of guilty pleasure.
Okay, so my guilty pleasure are action movies, especially Kung Fu parodies.
Fantastic.
So Kung Fu Hustle, you know, Legend of the Drunken Master. Like these are, I love these movies. Now, everyone that works with me that knows that I make usually serious documentaries is like, what? You know? But, and that's great. And I love those, and I appreciate the art and the way it was shot and the camera work and the music and all of it. But afterwards, I had a good time, but I'm not transformed or I'm not changed in any way. Other than I start thinking, how can I work in an action sequence to a documentary?
Exactly.
But I think even when I go to see a documentary, if it's really good, I just learned about something I never would have learned about before. I was also entertained, but my life was enhanced in some way. And I think with, you know, there's a lot more amazing stuff, but there's a lot more not so amazing stuff, and a lot of people are getting tired of it. you know, the spineless reality and the shows that are just, you know, laughable. And those have a place, absolutely. But I think a lot of people want more. And I think a lot of the mainstream wants more.
I think they do. And also, what do you explain the kind of fascination in this part of the world, though? What do you think that explains that shift? Because I'm sure you've met people in Dubai, I guess on your travels promoting this film. What have they told you about?
Well, okay, I've only been here a couple of days, but you have so many different cultures converging. So why wouldn't people be more interested in things that they didn't know about? I mean, this is... everybody is certainly not one ethnicity, religion, anything. There's just a wonderful mixture here. And so I think in countries like Malaysia and in countries like Dubai, which are made up of 90% non-Emiratis, that there's even more opportunities there because you have this hodgepodge all over and they love, you know, they live in these places because of the diversity. So they love to hear unusual stories.
So what's next? Have you got the next one brewing? Have you planned it? Can you tell us?
My plan, which will change, is it starts in January, and it'll start with changing the title, but right now it's called Hashtag Girls in Tech, which I thought was a great title when I was writing it out, and now that I say it out loud, it doesn't sound as good as I thought it would. But basically, there's a competition called Technovation.
Right.
And there are high school girls from 30 countries who have 3 months to create an app that solves a problem in their local community. And they get mentored, they learn how to computer program. They didn't think they could computer program. They learn they can change things they don't like in their community. So these girls are completely transformed over a 3-month period. Last year, the team that went to the internationals every year in San Francisco, they were from Moldova.
Right.
Nobody had ever competed from Moldova before. And these girls wrote an app that tested for Hep A in the local water supply and kept track of it. I mean, they're 15, 16, and 17 years old. And so I just think if I can manage to shoot in a few countries and hopefully follow the winner to San Francisco, I think it could make a really great story.
That's absolutely fantastic. Before we go, give us a plug for the latest documentary on Costa Rican coffee pickers.
Okay. A Small Section of the World is a story about a group of female coffee producers from the Talamanca Mountains in Costa Rica. They are so remotely located that it is a 5-hour drive from the capital city, 2 hours on a dirt road, and they literally raised funds and built a coffee mill on top of a hill. I'm making a little apex point with my hands that you can't see. And through that, they transformed their entire community. None of the women went to college. They're sending all their kids to college. The school is painted. The roads are better. And it's transformed the life of everyone, including the men in the village. And men will really like the story as well.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Leslie Chilcott. Her latest film, A Small Section of the World, will be premiering on the Sundance channel, that's Astro 438, this Saturday, February 7th at 10 p.m. Tune in, catch it, I've seen it, it's brilliant. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.